Welcome to Packet Pushers, the data networking podcast where real people discuss events, technology, and work life in the networking industry. During the week, we gather articles and ideas and get it together to flap our chins about them. But this week, the show's all about OpenFlow. OpenFlow is a new networking technology that shows some real potential to turn the networking world on its head, or at least give it a solid whack sideways. And this week, some serious venture capital money has been flowing into it, and the topics are getting pretty hot around it. So what we've done is approach some people. We're going to get around the workbench and talk about it. But before we start the team meeting, Packet Pushers is looking for sponsors and donations. So I'm going to do a little begging here. As the show's getting bigger and taking on bigger topics, it's getting harder and harder for me to run the whole thing as a hobby in my spare time. Typically, each show takes about 5 to 8 hours to organise, produce, edit, publish, and it's getting to be a real labour of love to bring you the show. Now, I love it, but I need to find a way to make it work out. So if you're a company who wants to reach out to 4,000-odd networking nerds who care enough to listen to a very, very technical show in their spare time, and they're often senior or leaders within their respective organisations, then Packet Pushers has a sponsorship option that you should talk to us about. It doesn't cost a whole lot, and it should get you good results. If you're a listener of the show, there's three things you could do to help us out and make us greater. One, tell other people about us. As the numbers grow, it gets easier for me to convince advertisers that it's worth sponsoring the show. It's also easy to get big names and big companies to join in the fun. Tell everyone. Leave a review on iTunes, blog about the show, talk about us at conferences, hit the Facebook, the Twitter, the Google Buzz, whatever it is. Tell more people. Get them listening. Second, there's a donation button up at packetpushers.net. If you can flip me some coffee money to say thanks, well, that would be pretty awesome too. And finally, there's a mailing list on the Packet Pushers website. Now, vendors tell me that they'll pay money to be able to send emails to you. I'm not entirely happy about that, so I'm going to keep your details private, and I won't sell the list, but I will send the content to you, not someone else. Now, most likely that's going to be companies who'll sponsor us. We'll be the only ones allowed to use the list, so I'm going to be careful not to be painful for you, but do me a favour. Head over to the website and sign up to the form in the sidebar at packetpushers.net, and that'll help me to keep pushing the show out. Let's introduce the people on the show today. Our great friend of the show, Ivan Pepelniak. How have you been, Ivan?
Pretty good, thank you.
Yeah, been doing anything entertaining this week?
Oh, yeah, IPv6.
The gift that keeps on giving. It's going to be my career for the next 5 years. I can feel it.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's so many misconceptions out there.
Yeah. It's the gift that keeps giving for podcasters, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
And with us this week is special guest Matt Davey from the Indiana Ed University. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Matt, and where you're from and what you do.
Yes, I'm from Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. I am the network architect for the university, and we also have something called the Global Network Operations Center, about 85 folks here who manage networks for research and education networks around the U.S. and internationally for probably about 18 different networks that we manage for people.
Awesome. So, important stuff.
Fun stuff.
Fun stuff. That's great. Now, the reason that we got you on the show was because I've seen a lot of details flying around about OpenFlow networking, and I was interested in it, and I was sort of following you up, and I noticed that you'd done some stuff, so I reached out to you over the social networking stuff somewhere along the line, and you said, yeah. So I guess the first thing to talk about is, give me an intro to OpenFlow. Tell me what's exciting about it.
So we have, I've been working with OpenFlow for about a year, year and a half now through a project that the National Science Foundation, the U.S. funds, called the Global Environment for Network Innovation. And so the genesis of OpenFlow was really from the network research community looking for a way that they could manipulate the forwarding tables and routers and switches so they could do their research to build on top of commercially available hardware and instead of just building their things on top of PC hardware on Linux or on customized hardware. You know, they wanted to actually be able to build on top of commodity switch hardware. And so they needed a way to actually to reach into those switches and actually manipulate the forwarding tables from an external server. And that allowed them to use software, you know, try new ideas in networking. And hence, this is where the terminology, you know, software-defined networking really comes into play.
Let me try and abstract that a little bit. Today we have switches. And effectively, they're kind of like any computer. They have a CPU and then they have a forwarding layer. Now, like a server has a CPU and a bus and a network card and then things get done and the data goes in and out. A switch is kind of still there's a data plane and there's a control plane. So what you're saying is the software that runs the control plane is open source or general purpose.
And yes, and it can be actually physically separated from the data plane. One analogy is sort of the chassis-based switch where you tip engine or a supervisor card and an internal Ethernet bus where it talks to the actual line cards. In this case, your control plane can be running on a standard, x86 server on a Linux platform, and then actually be communicating with the data plane that lives inside a separate box in a standard switching product platform.
So instead of going and downloading iOS or HP's Comware or Arista's EOS and loading that onto the switch, we would download – would it continue with that embedded OS, and that embedded OS would then talk to an external controller, or is it
– You still have firmware that's actually running on the switch. So there's actually really two modes this can be done in. One is sort of the native OpenFlow mode or a hybrid mode. So if you look at the hybrid mode, you still have your firmware running on your switch, and OpenFlow is sort of implemented as an overlay on that. And so typically in a hybrid mode setup, OpenFlow is enabled on a per port or a per VLAN basis. So you go in and enable OpenFlow on a VLAN. So the switch can still be doing its normal forwarding operation for all the other traffic.
Using spanning tree or routing or whatever it is that...
Whatever it's doing, exactly. And then that one VLAN, then you get control over the forwarding table entries for that one VLAN. As opposed to a native mode where you might have a very sort of dumbed-down version of firmware running on top of the hardware that all it knows how to do is what it's told via OpenFlow from a controller. There are those available as well, and we use some of those. But I think more people will see the hybrid mode as this thing starts to roll out into products.
I wanted to add one thing, Greg, to this discussion. I know that people won't like it, but the software that does the control function doesn't have to be open source.
Indeed.
Correct.
OpenFlow is an API. It's a protocol. So you can have proprietary software on the control plane. You could have proprietary firmware in the switches, or both can be open source, or you can have any combination of the two.
Absolutely. In fact, I think just a few weeks ago, NEC released proprietary controller software that they have developed.
So based on, let's say, how good Cisco claims iOS is, this could be a great idea for them to, offer iOS with OpenFlow as an OpenFlow controller.
Or as an OpenFlow destination endpoint.
Oh, that wouldn't work for them.
What do you call a switch that's enabled for OpenFlow? Is it an edge point or a node, or is it a...
Yeah, I don't know what the terminology there is. We typically just refer to it as an OpenFlow-enabled switch.
Well, that's not very comfortable. We have to have a good TLA for that.
How about the Borg drone?
And Borg drone. I like it. We need to get this syntax defined early, Ivan, and make the vendors adopt it.
Exactly.
We'll have to have another session to work this out. I noticed Cisco was using the Borg and Big Brother terminology.
Yes, I was amazed. Yes. I was like, wow.
You invented in that blog post a few... Although John McManus says that... I met up with John McManus this week, and he said that he mentioned it in one of the podcasts. So maybe it's been spinning around the sphere.
Yeah, I got it from someone. I definitely got Borg from someone.
Yeah.
At least a hint. Big Brother is mine.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought it was... So you're running OpenFlow now, Matt?
Yes, we are. We have about six OpenFlow switches enabled on our campus. Actually, typically my PC is run through an OpenFlow-enabled network. We also have, we threw up an SSID on our wireless controller that plumbs all the traffic back into an OpenFlow network. So we have about 30 or 40 users on any given day joining in and helping us generate some traffic to test it out.
And it's not just your university, it's more.
Yes, there are at least seven universities in the project that are both doing some research with it, as well as putting up production networks in their campus and getting users on them.
Do you have any long-distance OpenFlow-enabled links?
Absolutely. Both the Internet 2 network and the National Lambda network, which are national research and education backbones, each have five OpenFlow-enabled switches enabled on a national footprint. So, yeah, we're managing both of those backbones and have experiments running across those.
How do you link them together?
In one case, they're actually linked together with wavelengths, 10 gigabit circuits.
So it's Lambda.
And Lambda-based. In the other case, it's actually an IP overlay, Ethernet over MPLS.
Okay. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Now, those are managed by your team?
Yes, those are managed by our team.
Okay. So what's open? So those switches are – now, my understanding is the switches that you would currently choose to run that today are certain specific vendors' products. Like I think there's a HP ProCurve. There's some NEC products that are OpenFlow ready.
Yeah, those are the two that we're using, the NEC IP8800s and the HP E-Series 3500s and 5400s.
And there's also some other vendors who are building OpenFlow-specific products as well, isn't there? So there's a third-party market coming up in that area.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of work going on amongst different vendors, yes.
So if I would like to experiment with this, let's say, at home, in my lab, wherever, can I get those two switches with that specific firmware?
Yes, you can. I believe the NEC switch they just released, you can get that straight as a product. I believe you have to sign an agreement with HP to get the switch, but get the firmware that supports it, but it's pretty widely available and actually supported by them.
Oh, perfect.
I've been contacted by a number of vendors who make third-party products, not only the NEC, but they're pushing out a range of products in that space, and it's going to be interesting to see how they will compete with what is, to my mind, Ivan, I don't know what you think, but you know, we already have Arista, HP, Brocade, you know, the Cisco's, Extreme, you know, Act on Netgear. There's a whole bunch, Huawei, Avaya. There's a bunch of switch vendors. Is there room for more switching vendors to be, like, more hardware manufacturing in this industry?
Well, Greg, it's a complete game changer.
Yeah.
Because today, well, Cisco was doing their own silicon, as you know.
Yeah.
And even they went to merchant silicon with the new Nexus 3000.
Mm. That was a big surprise. That was the one they announced today, wasn't it?
Yesterday.
The something 3000.
Yeah. At least I think I got it somewhere in one of the blog posts. Someone said that they're sort of confirmed they're using merchant silicon.
Yeah, the Broadcom chip.
Yeah. Mm. And you see once, and the value of all these vendors is in the software. Because once everyone starts using merchant silicon, there is no value in silicon.
Yeah.
Now, if we go to OpenFlow, then anyone can do any switch, because the switches themselves will be, as Matt just said, you know, a lot of hardware and very basic firmware.
Yeah.
So I don't think we'll see as many switch vendors as we have today. There will be fewer of them.
Yeah.
And if this goes through, they will just make, you know, commodity hardware like they're making commodity servers today.
Networking companies buying off-the-shelf networking chips, gluing them into a predetermined pattern with some limited amount of software there. Is that?
If I would be a networking company, I wouldn't even bother making those switches.
Just let Dell do it.
Yeah.
Somebody who's used to doing time and place. So, Matt, do you see that changing the way the networking industry looks?
Yeah, I think it could. As Ivan said, the hardware could go commodity and be very much like we see in the server industry, and the value is really added in the software, and there could be a real explosion of software. If you look at what Cisco and Juniper are doing in the SDK space, like the Juno Space SDK, where they're looking to get third parties to build applications on top of their operating system to extend the value of the operating system by building applications on top. This could enable a very similar environment where people can build base application, and then people can build on top of that, and you could see a real explosion of software, and that's where the real value is.
What we have then, let's drill into some more of those technical details. We have a switch. Today we could just have a port or a given VLAN, and the forwarding rules for that in a normal switch are built around the layer 3 or the layer 2. So spanning tree or the routing protocol would say this frame needs to go from this port to this port. So in what's happening now is the switch is now communicating with an OpenFlow controller in some place. The OpenFlow controller makes decisions about what to load into the forwarding table of the switch. Is that conceptually right?
That's conceptually right. And then the OpenFlow controller can actually control a number of different switches. And so just like a supervisor can control a number of different line cards, a controller can control different switches.
Yeah, or if you believe in distributed intelligence like I do, then you can have a copy of OpenFlow controller running on each switch. So it looks exactly like the switches look today.
Yes. Or you could have a much like your wireless controller environment, you could have a dozen or more controllers running somewhere, centrally or distributed in your network.
Yeah, or you have anything in between.
Yes. You could even have some of the logic execute on the inside the firmware on the switch itself, and some of it execute back at the controller.
So there's no one way to do this. OpenFlow is an API for communication between units, functional areas of the design.
Greg, OpenFlow is the way to download TCAMs into line cards.
Sort of. And in 1.0, most of the implementations, you're just manipulating the TCAM. With the 1.1 version of the spec that was OpenFlow spec that was recently finished, there is multiple table support.
So yeah, I've seen that. I love it.
You could populate the layer 3 table or a layer 2 table in addition to the TCAM.
Yeah, or MPLS table or whatever you have.
Exactly.
For the people who are listening who don't know what TCAM is, I'll put a link in the show notes to a blog post I wrote about TCAM memory and what it is inside a switch. But in grossly simplistic terms, it's the special memory that keeps the list of the MAC tables and performs the forwarding between the two. The advantage of the TCAM is it's a very power-hungry piece of silicon that goes inside the switch, and it's of a finite size. It's expensive to make, expensive to run, and very power-hungry inside the device. So you can only have a very finite amount of it. So if there's one thing that network designers are concerned about, it's a very efficient use of the TCAM. The TCAM can't be exceeded. TCAM is a deterministic lookup, and that is in two clock cycles it can look up a table for no matter how big the TCAM gets in its size. And that's its big feature. OpenFlow then is a communication protocol between an agent and a server. The server can be on switch, can be off switch. The agent is the TCAM or the software agent in the switch which loads the TCAM for the forwarding tables itself. Therefore, if the controller is very far away, one of the big problems with controllers of that is if the agent and server are too far apart, then the forwarding tables won't be updated in time. How does OpenFlow handle that condition?
I think there are a couple of ways you can deal with it. One is to locate the server closer to the agent and to reduce that. It also depends on what you're trying to accomplish with the controller. So, for example, in this hybrid mode I talked about, if you're only manipulating a particular VLAN or you're only manipulating a portion of the traffic, it may be okay to have longer delay. For example, in a hybrid mode, you have this action. So you're doing a match in the TCAM against a set of traffic, a set of packets. And then you have a set of actions. Do you want to drop the packet? Do you want to forward it out a specific port? Well, in a hybrid switch, you sometimes have the option of a normal action, which means match this packet and then use the normal switch forwarding mechanism to forward the packet, whether that be based on MAC address learning or routing or whatever it may be. So it's possible to only – you could think of it more as pushing out ACLs through radius, for example. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking of a closet switch example, you could use OpenFlow in place of radius to push ACLs out to individual switch ports. If you're doing that, you may not care so much about what the delay between the server and the agent is.
Well, there's different requirements between a campus and a data center.
No, but this is a nice application. I love it. No, I really do. I love it.
You love the whole idea of OpenFlow?
I love the idea. I am skeptical about some ways some people are envisioning how they will implement it. And we can get there if you wish to.
Okay. Well, I thought what we might do is we might dig a little bit more over how it works and how it goes together.
Yeah.
So that, and then we'll come to where it breaks. Because...
No, but the idea to download ACLs, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And that's one of the first places we're looking to use it. We have a homegrown NAC system, and being able to, instead of using SNMP writes or radius to push those ACLs out, it's a much better mechanism to programmatically control those than the ones that are available today.
obviously there's different requirements between a campus network and a data center network and a WAN network. So the time taken to reprogram, you know, the forwarding table in a campus network might be, you know, 10 or 20 seconds, and that would be a perfectly acceptable, you know, I'm just making those numbers up. You know, but you know what, a campus network, yes, would have 10 or 20 seconds, but a data center network would need to converge or manipulate the forwarding tables, and there's lots of reasons why you would manipulate the forwarding tables, but would need to do that within, you know, half a second or 250 milliseconds or even less.
Yes.
But on a WAN, we are more tolerant nominally to packet loss, so maybe, you know, some longer time frame. The distance to the controller might be dependent upon the way you want the network to act.
Yeah, yes, correct. And it depends on each of those environments and depends on exactly the functionality you're trying to get out of it.
So you said about putting ACLs in the edge switch in a campus network. Obviously that, as you say, is part of NAC today. So you would have, instead of having NAC, which is, you know, the server does 802.1x, would there be some new interaction that would occur?
Yes, there could be. It could be based on MAC address of the client. It could be based on a number of different mechanisms. We actually don't use 802.1x today for a number of reasons specific to larger university environments. And so this is particularly attractive to us.
Well, you would have trouble controlling the endpoints there.
Yes, I mean, exactly. Troubles controlling the endpoints, you know, when you have every type of client known to man on your network, it's kind of difficult to make your Xboxes and Wii's do 802.1x.
Not something I have a problem with in my corporate enterprise. So now we're looking at, we've got the switches distributed around a campus. So what about OpenFlow and the WAN? So I guess one of the things that we could actually do is we could actually be saying from an OpenFlow controller is going to see a whole bunch of Ethernet switches around the edge of some sort of WAN network. And it could start to actually change the forwarding tables per frame or per flow, or dynamically say this packet needs to be forwarded down this link on this link and the return, and then go and program the switch at the other end to say use this link to come back so there's no asymmetric flow. Is that the sort of things that OpenFlow offers in a WAN environment?
You see, that's where it makes me nervous.
Okay.
The problem that I guess some of the people I've watched those videos published by Stanford, mm-hmm, and they're very interesting and they have great ideas. But the problem I have with some of those ideas is that it looks like they haven't thought about scalability yet. So if you're saying I will use OpenFlow to establish paths across WAN network, like the service providers were doing, you know, with the network management stations, and they provisioned the ATM PVCs, that's perfect. I'm all for it. And it would be, by the way, it would be totally identical in functionality to what they're trying to do with MPLS-TP. So we would have double standards there. That would be fun. But if you start talking about provisioning flows on a WAN network, there you get into serious scalability issues because there are so many of them.
Sure, but you could have multiple controllers coherently pulling together. It's just a case of solving those.
You see, the problem is that there are so many flows traversing the WAN networks.
Or maybe you could just do it for an MPLS.
Well, you could do it
for
a given
tag or per label. You know, labels wouldn't go away.
Well, labels are VCs, actually.
Yes.
In ATM networks, we had VCs, and they had those VPI, VCI values, and that's the same thing with MPLS labels. But as soon as you go into really deep into granularity of individual flows, those things no longer scale on a WAN link.
I agree completely. You know, if you're looking at an application for an edge closet switch where you have a couple dozen clients on it, you may be able to look at more specific fields and packets and have more specific rules. Certainly when you go to the WAN, you know, looking at an MPLS provisioning or an Ethernet VLAN provisioning mechanism at that granularity, it probably makes more sense. You know, I've worked in large provider networks for a while, and you look at how those paths are provisioned today, especially across vendor platforms from a network management software perspective. And this is definitely a much better mechanism for doing those provisionings than the mechanisms that are being used today.
Oh, absolutely. More so if they want to provision everything from a central management system.
Yeah, and any service provider of any size has multiple vendors, and so they typically are writing their own software to provision across vendors.
Yes, agreed.
But I guess, so caution is required here. OpenFlow is very early. To me, it looks like it barely escaped from the lab.
I would characterize it as being maybe a little bit further than that, and it'll be interesting to see in terms of products what comes available in the next 9 to 12 months. But you're right that it's still fairly early on in the process here, and I don't think anyone's going to see walk out next month and deploy a product on their network using OpenFlow. But it may not be that much further along.
One of the interesting things about this is that it does shift networking technology away from just a plug and play and having defined protocols like OSPF, which are rigid about how they control packet forwarding, to something far more flexible and fluid in the future.
Yes, and I think the other really interesting thing is it really opens it up for anyone to program. I'm not a whiz-bang programmer, but within a couple minutes, I was able to do some basic programming and manipulate packets without actually a lot of knowledge about what I ramp up time to figure it out. So it really opens up networking software to the masses, and it could be really interesting to see the kinds of especially open source projects that could come out of that.
That was one of the comments to my today's blog post. Someone saying, you know what, this could be ideal for enthusiasts.
Yes. It's ideal for education as well, I think.
Absolutely.
Being in an educational space, we're involved in at least two, working on a third open source project related to this, and bringing in students and faculty together with our IT staff. It's just a really great opportunity.
Weaknesses, Ivan, where are the weaknesses in this? One of the things that we probably want to point out is that OpenFlow has a foundation which is supporting it, which is the OpenFlowFoundation.org, if I remember correctly.
Open Networking Foundation, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, so OpenNetworkingFoundation.org.
Is one organization. And then there's another place called OpenFlow.org, which is actually...
the OpenFlow website, yeah.
Yeah, that's where you want to go. So if you want to see... some information, not that there's a whole lot of information there.
If you want to play marketing bingo, you go to Open Network Foundation.
Yes.
If you want to get technical details, you go to openflow.org,
excellent.
Which is good.
Excellent summary, Ivan. Now, there is one piece of information is that I know, and I have been speaking to NEC and other companies who are promoting their OpenFlow products. And it's interesting to see them starting to enter into the market. It seems as though they see that as an opening. Why, Matt, why is NEC so keen to get in on OpenFlow? They seem to be very big on it.
Well, it's, I think my take would be it's a, potentially disruptive technology. And if you want to, advance your place in the market, I think it's a great place to be making an investment right now.
Can I add my cynical side to it?
Of course you can. Don't ask, just go.
If they go with OpenFlow, and if, eventually someone makes the merchant silicon, and then Dell starts producing OpenFlow switches, then all of a sudden NEC doesn't have to invest into hardware development anymore. So they don't have to invest heavily to be competitive with Cisco or HP or Juniper or whoever else. They just need to pay programmers.
And they can just use someone else's gear. But, NEC gets a lot of money out of making hardware. So they want to make the hardware without having to do the software, would be my spin.
I wouldn't want to be in that position.
Okay.
That's going to be like PC-compatible market.
Yeah, well, NEC makes a range of servers and computers today. They're already in that marketplace. So
okay,
maybe,
fine.
In Japan, they're the largest manufacturer of networking equipment, and also servers and desktops, as my understanding.
Yes, I think the people that have learned to make money in the server market and selling server hardware will probably learn to make money in the networking hardware market as well.
Yeah. So this, when I said earlier, this is something I see Dell getting very excited about. I imagine that they'll be very quick to manufacture a switch.
Oh, that's why they joined this foundation.
Well, and that brings us to the next point, is that we've seen the recent announcement of the foundation and all the major vendors seem to have lined up. So Broadcom, Brocade, Ciena, Cisco, Citrix, Dell, Ericsson and Force 10 are all members. Also, entertainingly, is that the board of directors also contains representatives from Facebook, Google, Verizon, Yahoo and even Microsoft, which suggests that there's either it's flies around a can of poo and they can't help themselves... or there's some magic going on and they all want to bask in the glow of positive karma.
No, Greg, they want to reduce their costs.
That's what I mean about poo and flies. Okay. Oh, we had hope for so much higher. So Matt, you feel that all of these companies are getting on board because they see a new way? Do you think that's all? Some of it looks like a defensive play. I mean, I can't imagine that Cisco's in there to... you know, actively promote it, but are they there to track what's going on and things like that?
You know, I think there's really two aspects to this, and one is the central control aspect and sort of the virtualization aspect. If you look, you know, I listened to your podcast on data center fabrics, mm-hmm. and this idea of sort of, you know, centralized knowledge and distributed fabric. You know, there's something to that, and OpenFlow is certainly something you could use to build that sort of fabric. And then there's the other side, which is the, you know, sort of the commoditization of the hardware, and I think different vendors probably see different aspects of that as being interesting to them.
Oh, by the way, I have to jump in on the fabric side. If we compare the what the vendors claim their fabrics are doing to the OpenFlow concept, where you would have a centralized controller, the biggest fabric of high-end switches that anyone has been able to show today in a production network has two switches. That's what the vendors have been able to demonstrate as workable solution, two switches.
The concept behind fabric is that instead of having the fabric inside a switch, you know, it's that silicon engine inside of there that actually does takes the frame in and then puts it back out on another board. They're trying to extend that into a multi-switch environment that's physically...
Oh, that's what Cisco is doing with VSS. That's what Juniper is doing with their XRE. That's what HP is doing with IRF.
Yep.
Maximum number of switches?
Two. Yeah, because you can only connect those silicon chips.
Period.
Two, yeah. But you can make a FAT-based clos tree, right? And that's what... Juniper's Q fabric is an attempt to make a multi-stage cloth fabric.
Yeah, but we'll see how that will work. Because if you remember what they told us on Tech Field Day,
yeah,
in their stackable switches, they're running ISIS internally. So it looks like one switch. Mm-hmm. It's actually trill, sort of.
But stackables don't have to go that fast. They've only got, 128 gig backplane or something?
Yeah, So I would be surprised if their Q fabric be really, centralized control plane.
It will be. It actually has a centralized silicon engine in the core. There's a...
Yeah, that will be the master.
Yeah, that will be the master. And every one of the edge switches will connect directly to... In the same way that every blade in a 6500 connects down to the silicon fabric on the supervisor, Juniper's going to have...
Let's wait and see.
Yeah, we'll wait and see. I mean, it's still very early days. I mean...
But, you know, I think anyone that has a really large data center, a really large network, if you have thousands of switches, you know, everyone's looking at a way to make that more manageable in some sense. And centralized control, I mean, it's like I use the analogy of wireless controllers when I explain to these people. You know, I have 4,000 access points. I can't manage those all individually. There has to be some other mechanism. And so there has to be some central control mechanism here once you try to scale data center networks to that size.
I guess that brings us to the last point, is this: a big part of this is about orchestration, management, and cost of ownership. Having that central point, even if you don't use it as a configuration tool, but as an ability to have an OpenFlow controller which has all of the configurations reporting back to it, and your ability to look at you've got much better control of your entire network than you've got just using what we do today with SNMP or XML or things like the existing YAML, Yang, Beep, Conf type stuff that we have now that hasn't really taken off. Is it the orchestration which is really exciting you?
Yeah, it is. I think that's very interesting. I sort of independently from the controller-based wireless side started thinking about this a number of years ago. We need something this for our wired switch network. How the ease of going into a wireless controller and pushing a new SSID out to 4,000 access points, I want to be able to manage my wired network with that same amount of ease from one central place. So I think that's pretty exciting.
Is that the most exciting thing?
I don't know. There are a lot of exciting things about it. Like I said, I think the open aspect of it and that it opens up for anyone to innovate in networking here, certainly from a university space, is extremely interesting to us.
Yeah, I'm looking at some switches here from a company called IW Networks, which is quite entertaining. And they have some – I don't know if you've looked at them, but they have their own OpenFlow system ready to go, which is pretty interesting. And I guess the other thing to note is that there's a company called Big Switch, which was in a website today called BizJournals in San Jose. They've managed to close a venture capital funding round for $13 million US for setting up a open controller software development process, which is actually led by Guido Appenzeller, who is, if I remember rightly, sort of the guy who got this whole idea started.
He's definitely one of the guys at Stanford. This came out of Nick McEwen's group at Stanford, the Clean Slate Project. He was definitely involved with that, and we've actually been working with them a bit.
Okay, so he's been talking to you about getting data back from you and how to grow it and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
What can I say?
I don't know.
It's an interesting concept. It gives you a lot of opportunity. I got really excited before when we discussed that idea about downloading access lists.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people will get burned because they will forget, the basics about scalability, distributed intelligence, yada, 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 yada.
Yeah.
And they will try to do too many things on a too granular scale and they will run out of resources. It will work great in a lab and then they will try to migrate that into a live, high-volume network and discover that it's a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But apart from that, yeah, I like the approach.
I like the idea. I think that particularly in the data center, it's got some interesting ideas because you could be reprogramming the switches very quickly to route around. I can see a controller in the center of a data center programming switches to route around congestion points inside of a core.
Oh, not sure you want to do that.
I am. Greg, if I'm Facebook or if I'm Google, I probably do.
The problem is that the moment you start doing that, you're disrupting the network and you might get into an oscillation.
But the OpenFlow controller is going to see the whole state of the data center network and have it's not an unbound condition.
Well, let's just say that this thing has been tried before.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, I don't think many people have successfully deployed this on a short time scale. I know about people who recompute the whole load over their network using NetFlow data, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then they set up different parameters for MPLS traffic engineering. So it works. But they do this on hourly or even longer periods.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. You go ahead, Matt.
I think the other interesting part here is the virtualization aspect of this. So one thing developed at Stanford that we've been using that's interesting is called FlowVisor. And so if you think about separating your control and data planes, it gives you a point between those to actually have sort of a hypervisor layer where you can have different control planes controlling different parts of the same piece of hardware, not unlike Juniper has sort of their multi-chassis system where they have sort of the chassis of route engines that can control different parts of a piece of hardware. You can sort of think of along those lines where you can have different control planes controlling different parts of a piece of hardware. And so you really can introduce this hypervisor layer into your network. And it really opens the door for a lot of possibilities there in terms of how you virtualize your network and can do it very similar to how you might do hypervisors in your server space. So I think that's a really interesting area of exploration.
And maybe that's where it'll start first.
Oh, you know what the other thing you could do? Finally, you could integrate the physical switches with the virtual switches.
Yeah.
So that's when you move a VM, everyone knows it has moved and everyone knows what he needs to do. So if someone does a software that does that, I would go like, wow, finally. And if it works on layer 3, it will be like, okay, now they get it.
Yeah. So let me suggest to you that from some details I've seen that VMware is extremely interested in OpenFlow.
Yes, and in fact, there's something
that's
called
good news.
Yes.
There's something called Open vSwitch, which is a hypervisor switch that works with Citrix Xen, which is controllable via OpenFlow today. So
that's true. I'd forgotten about that. They're trying to get traction with the vendors, aren't they, to get that software more widely deployed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hmm. I don't think VMware is too interested in it. It's orthogonal to their strategy, but I know that VMware is interested in OpenFlow probably for the reasons that we've just discussed.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes sense. You can actually signal to a central controller that this Ethernet port just went from here to here and all the data that attaches to it goes with it.
You know what they could actually solve with OpenFlow? Their vCloud Director nightmare, the Mac and Mac stuff.
Yes.
So with OpenFlow, that would be solvable.
I was thinking about that Mac and Mac stuff, and I was realizing that it solves a whole bunch of problems to do with networking, and I understand why they're doing it. But I think OpenFlow is a better long-term strategy.
Yeah.
Greg, to go back to maybe to your question about does this obsolete, firewalls, I think the potential is there to implement a lot of features on top of the switches that are already there that replace some of that functionality. If you look at these switches we have in our wiring closets, they typically have 2,500 or 3,000 TCAM entries in them.
Yep.
So accessless entries you could put in them, and we don't really have that many in there because they're really hard to take advantage of. And if you could take advantage of those and someone could write some software that would push those rules out in some reasonable way, you could really offload some of those rules from a more centralized point in your network.
Well, it's true. The TCAMs are actually very flexible arrays, like, stores, and we don't use a lot of them because there's a hard limit of TCAM entries. And if you go over it, the switch just stops working. So we have more TCAMs than we usually need.
Yeah.
Oh, and also, if we go back to the virtualization space, what Cisco is doing with VSG is exactly the thing that you could do with OpenFlow vSwitch and OpenFlow controller acting as a firewall.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, is you could actually program,
Because what they're doing is, as you get a new flow,
you inspect it
gets sent to the VSG, just like OpenFlow would send, OpenFlow switch would send the data of a new flow to the controller.
Yep.
And then the VSG downloads the 5-tuple, well, the 6-tuple because it has the VLAN as well.
Yeah.
Into the Nexus 1000.
Mm-hmm. Which is effectively acting as your forwarding engine.
Yeah, and this is exactly what you could achieve with OpenFlow.
Mm.
So it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Only implemented with, they use a proprietary API, and here it's open.
Very exciting. Well, guys, I'm going to have to wrap it there because I've got a raving headache. It's not what you wanted to hear, but there you go. And it's my bedtime.
It's an open source headache or not?
That's it for the show this week, and thanks for listening to Packet Pushers. We should be back again real soon. Make sure you come back. I'd like to thank our external resources for joining us this week. Matt, tell us where we can find you, and tell us what you're doing this week.
You can find me at iunetworking.blogspot.com, and pretty much working on OpenFlow for the time being.
A full-time job.
It is a full-time job for me.
Okay. And also, of course, Ivan, you got any more of these seminars coming up?
Oh, yeah. Next week is data center.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be blogging about a little bit more about the data center stuff these days. I got information about how Brocade's trunks work, so that will be fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then there is Lisp launched on Nexus 7000, so there are a few things to discuss there. And then long term, there is the new DNVPN new features webinar.
Oh, okay.
It's starting in early May.
Yep.
So I need to develop that one.
Okay. Lots coming up from you. And of course, people can find you at?
Well, it's either at iOSHints or blog.ioshints.info.
And your Twitter handle is at iOSHints. And of course, I'm Greg Farrow. You can find me at etherealmind.com or on the Twitter at etherealmind. Don't hesitate to go over to the podcast website where we post show notes with links and various comments from the show and links to other people's blogs. Remember, we'd love to hear your feedback about today's show, so send an email to packetpushers@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking. Check out the website at packetpushers.net and leave comments, hurl abuse, shower us with love, or even follow us on the Twitter at packetpushers. And remember, too much networking would never be enough.